All right, I'd like to get our 1 o'clock diversity and mining panel discussion started here. I'm going to introduce Dani Ringrose Hobbs. She's contracts and procurement and culture partner at BHP. She's going to moderate a session and do the introduction for our panelists. Dani, she has more than 10 years of experience in mining and major projects, responsible for full life cycle contracts and contractor management, specializing in strategy and risk-focused planning, inclusive contracting, collaborative formation, and the resolution of claims and cost reconciliation outcomes. She co-founded the grassroots team GIA. This team advocates for inclusion and diversity in the workplace, endeavors to model anti-oppressive practice, provides peer support to those experiencing exclusionary incidents, and enables the adjustment of organizational ecosystems to support all people in reaching their fullest potential. How about a warm welcome for Dani?
Thank you. Welcome, audience. To those of you who are perhaps still on the floor and haven't made your way in here, if you're at all curious, perhaps uncertain about what the next hour might hold, we'd welcome you to join us. So we're trusting that your bodies have been nourished by lunch, and we hope that this discussion will nourish your minds and hearts. Thank you to the Longwall Coal Association Organizational Committee for providing us this opportunity. Any conversation on inclusion and diversity starts by embracing diversity of thought, because each of us brings with us a unique perspective. By show of hands, who in the audience looks at this image and sees a bird? And by show of hands, who in the audience looks at this image and sees a rabbit? And by show of hands, who in the audience sees neither? So imagine, just for a moment, that we were a collection of people that saw this only one way. If we all saw it the same way, would we really be seeing the whole picture? Including a variety of people, different from one another with diverse perspectives, creates a diverse team. This ability to see the whole picture through diversity provides new insights and learnings once unavailable to each of us. It allows you to think beyond that which is obvious to you. The benefit of whole picture understanding is evidenced in the difference between equality, equity, and inclusion. In a state of equality, it's a one-size-fits-all experience, whether it works or not. We might all be at the game, like we will be tonight, but not all of us can participate or enjoy it. In a state of equity, there is consideration for individual needs and an effort to create a common experience. And with a culture of inclusion, all three people enjoy the game, as themselves, just as they are. But it took some whole picture, multi-perspective understanding to get there. How we individually experience our communities and our workplaces is based on our personal perspective, which is influenced by four factors. Factor one, the diversity dimension. A collection of experiences and life events that's referred to by my grandmother as life's wisdom. Factor two, unconscious bias. Our brains are designed to see and follow patterns. It gives you the ability to drive home after work on autopilot. But despite benefits like these, it means you will make unconscious decisions. You will not always see the forest for the trees. How aware of our patterns we become and our ability to disrupt them matters. Factor four, personal culture. Your core values, your definition of common sense, and intellectual competence, the degree to which you appreciate difference. As you consider diversity's labels, such as gender, race, educational background, overlay it with these four factors of perspective, indicates how you will feel in regards to inclusion and diversity, perhaps how you'll feel for the next 50 minutes, landing you somewhere on the inclusive mindset spectrum. Perhaps in regards to inclusion and diversity, you feel the need to avoid it. Perhaps you're curious. Perhaps you're already responding. Where you are on this spectrum is neither right nor wrong. It just is at this time. Becoming aware provides each of us the opportunity to take the next step. Many companies today are choosing to go on this journey because of the business case to do so. Who wants to make some money? Diversity leads to improved performance. It's not too surprising, since diverse teams have the ability to solve problems with the whole picture in mind. And who wants to save some money? There is a correlation between employee wellness and inclusive culture. Imagine the mental health impact of being excluded, bullied, harassed, or discriminated against. Mental health is the number one cause of disability claims and costs our economy $51 billion a year. In case at this point you're in the audience wondering, hey Danny, what the heck is culture really? Visualized here, the ocean and the fish, the sky and the birds represent the cultural ecosystem. Organizationally, that's our buildings, our colleagues, our leaders. And then there's you, the iceberg. A portion of which is above the surface. It's the way you act, what you say, what you wear, what you eat, and what our standard operating procedures say. And a portion lies below the surface. Those are our thoughts, our feelings, the unwritten and unspoken rules. Collectively, all of that comes together as culture. My name is Danny Ringrose Hobbs, and I acknowledge that we've gathered in this place on the traditional territory of Native American tribes. Today, I've been granted this honor by my colleagues, acknowledged and recognized as a knowledge holder and change agent for my company's cultural transformation. But getting to this day is attributable to personal struggle, a need to heal, and a feisty inner strength that doesn't shy away from challenging status quo creatively. You see, a number of years ago, my diversity dimension grew quickly through two major life events. First, I became a mom, the single greatest learning experience of my life. However, when I returned to work, people didn't value that learning experience the same way I did. And let me tell you, the workplace is not designed for lactating people. Shortly after, I found out that I was a gender pay gap statistic. Although the silver lining in that story is that the company analyzed it and then did something about it. And like most parents, I want better for my child. I do not want her to struggle or to be penalized because of her gender or her choice to parent. My second life experience, my spouse, a decorated journeyperson industrial mechanic, became disabled. A lower limb amputee as a result of a workplace injury. As he finishes rehab, I hope that rejoining the trades and the mining industry that he loves occurs without barrier and without discrimination. But will he be accepted, isolated, or excluded? It's through this adversity that I became the co-founder of the grassroots team mentioned earlier. So for the next 45 minutes, as the moderator of this panel, I'm committed to you. I want to create a meaningful conversation that provides you with two things. First, the opportunity to self-reflect and perhaps get interested. And second, to share ideas that will make your team healthier, more engaged, and more innovative. I'm equally committed to these panelists and creating a safe space for them. They will share with us their observations and their personal lived experiences. They are not on display for judgment. Rather, they are true reflections offered to the group as valuable insights and lessons learned. And what you, the audience, gain from this session, what ideas you take home to your organization, is entirely up to you. So let's go on the journey together. Joining us are our four panelists, three women in mining, Cheryl, Michelle, and Megan, and one male champion of change, Jez. I will turn it over to Michelle to give her introduction.
Hello, I am Michelle Beerich. I'm currently with Komatsu Mining Corporation, based out of Warrendale, PA. I joined Komatsu from the Mine Safety and Health Administration, and prior to that, I was with Alpha Natural Resources and Foundation Coal. I am their senior mining application engineer, and I work with a lot of the mines, coal, industrial minerals in this country, Canada, and all over the world. And I guess throughout my journey, the most, I guess, significant thing that happened was making the decision at almost, I guess, 35 years of age that it was time to go back to school. After raising my kids, got them in school, I decided I was going to go back and jumped right into engineering school. But, hey, I did it. I'm very happy about it. So I'm glad to be here today and nice to see you all here.
I'm Megan Belay. I also work with Danny and Cheryl for BHP at the Jansen Project in Saskatchewan, Canada. With my current role, I spend a lot of time in a diversified work field out in the field. And so with that, obviously, and some other experiences being a female in this industry, there's definitely some times for where I would say that inclusion and diversity could probably be improved a bit. Definitely excited to be part of the industry, though, and see the evolution that has even gone on in the past 7 years as I've been there, and very excited to be a part of the evolution over the next few years and where we all go.
Hey, good afternoon. My name is Jez Leeming. I'm currently the Global Product Director for Entry Development for Komatsu Mining. I've had a long and diverse career. I started my career in British Coal, in the underground side of British Coal, and I've subsequently had 29 years with Joy Mining Machinery. I'm here to give you a taste of my value and experience and provide another view of the perspective of diversity and inclusion, and particularly the view of working with women in the mining industry. Working with women in senior leadership roles in the UK and the USA, and also working with women in teams mainly in the USA. But I also give a slightly different perspective in looking at the cultural awareness and cultural differences across particularly our organisation. I've had a lot of experience working in India, Russia, Poland, China, and in South Africa. So I'm a big supporter of change and a supporter of diversity in the industry, and I've seen the advantages of women's contributions to our mining industry.
Hi, everyone. My name is Cheryl Godwin-Abel, and I work with Danny and Megan, as I said, and I'm the manager of project delivery for mine planning and equipment at the Jansen Project. I lead a team that's responsible for the underground mine design, as well as the sizing and selection of the mobile fleet to deliver on that design. I've been in industry for almost 30 years now, and I've had the opportunity to work in different operations and cultures in Canada, the United States, Australia, South America, China, and Europe. The majority of my time in mining has actually been in remote fly-in, fly-out operations in leadership roles. So on a personal side, I was brought up to believe that I could do anything that I put my mind to. I'm from a military family, and my mother is fiercely independent. My father has always pushed and encouraged me, and I'm blessed to have a husband who thinks I am the most brilliant person that he knows. And in 26 years, I haven't corrected him. I never really thought about my gender when looking at job opportunities. That really never came into my career choices. My experience in mining has mostly been a very positive one. I've felt encouraged and supported, but there have been challenges. Many times I walk into an office or a construction site or a mine site, and people literally just stop and stare. And, they're obviously not expecting me, and it kind of puts you back a bit when you realize you're such a surprise when you walk into a workplace. My voice was enough to turn all heads in my direction and stop all conversation, which, sounds like a lot of fun, but it really wasn't. It's actually quite intimidating at times, and I could find myself holding back and not giving all of myself, to what was being done at the time and to my company, and that didn't help me, and that didn't help my company at the time either. So after 30 years, it's really not much different. I'm still often either one or two women in the room, and there's not a whole lot of other diversity in the room either. But research clearly shows, and Danny mentioned a bit of it, that diversity brings value to an organization. It keeps us competitive. And I think the future challenges that we have in mining means that diversity is becoming an even more important business driver. We need to invite diversity into the room, and we need to have an inclusive environment where people can bring all of themselves to the table from day one. I believe in the business case. I also believe it's the right thing to do. And that's why I'm here, and I'm actually grateful to be able to have this discussion with you guys today. Thank you.
All right, so let's get going with some questions. So we'll start with a piece of moderated questions, and then we'll open it to the floor. So if there's any questions you might have for the panelists as we go through today, please feel free to jot them down, and we'll get to them. So Megan and Michelle, as women in mining and with educational backgrounds in science, technology, engineering, and math, referred to as STEM, how did you get here? Why have you just stayed despite your minority reality and the low statistical chances of being retained or achieving a leadership position?
So for myself, it was probably about grade four when I said that I liked math and science, and my mom told me I should be an engineer. No idea what it meant. We have no engineers in the family, don't even have family friends who are engineers, but it stuck. So I went to university. I went to University of British Columbia, and there its first year is general studies. And so after doing that and after praying about it and winning a hockey ticket, I decided to go into mining. And that's how I got into it. Through the co-op program there, it allows you to do work throughout your school term, and that was a phenomenal experience for me. It opened my eyes to the mining industry. I got to be involved and essentially fell in love with it right away. There are so many unique opportunities within it that other industries don't have, and there's so many great people that you get to work with. And everyone always says the industry is small, and it's true. You run into people all over the world. Even at airports, you'll randomly run into somebody who you've met before at a conference of some sort or at a workplace at one point in time. For myself, I would say that one of the reasons, obviously, that I would continue to stay in is because of my passion for it. And I, right now, as we're going through this change, I think that's definitely going to help as well in the retention process. I mean, we've spoken to it a bit already, but I know for myself, just being able to be a bit more open and have some of those challenging conversations that were maybe once frowned upon about even family planning and things like that. Like, it is becoming more accepted, and I'm very much hoping that as we continue through these years, all the companies continue to make those steps in the right direction to be able to support females and males and just continue to support them as they manage to do their work-life balance and continue on.
So my story is somewhat similar, but very different. I grew up in the backwoods of North Carolina. Four brothers, farm. I knew everything there was to know about tractors and tearing apart lawnmowers and weed eaters, and I loved rocks. So when I got old enough to realize that I should probably go back to school, it was a logical choice living in South Dakota to choose engineering. And I also knew that that would provide a foundation to move forward in my life, to make a good income. I didn't make the connection with mining until I was almost senior, and started looking into, you know, some of the things that went on. And I was like, hey, this might be the gig rather than going the petroleum and gas. So that's how I kind of wound up. And I jumped into it with Arch out west at PRB on a surface mine. Really loved it. Loved the coal shovels and, of course, the drag lines. And I happened to go to conference where they were looking to hire people right out of school. And I saw this big picture of a shearer. And I thought, what in the world is that? So the guy said, come on over here. Let me tell you about this machine. I was like, man, this is something. This is something cool. You're 1,000 feet deep and you run this machine. This is where I want to be. I interviewed with Bob Commutis with Foundation Coal, and here I was in PA in underground coal in a union operation and the only female in operations management. So very intimidating. A lot of people said, you're not going to last. You're not going to like it. It's pretty rough. It was that, but it was so much more. Those people were my family. They looked at me kind of like mother, sister, wife. I was even more brave with situations with critters, four-legged mice, birds. I had guys running, they were like 200-something pounds, to go running down the entry saying, there's a pterodactyl in the mine. I'd say, come on, it's a little sparrow, you know. But
it's like it fit. It worked. And I don't know if it was my background with my brothers, with the way I was raised, but it just fit. I can't remember if there was ever a time that I felt like I shouldn't be there. I don't feel like the crews ever questioned why I was there. I mean, I learned the law. I did what I thought was going to be best for the mine, for me, for my crews. And then from there went on to the MSHA, which I kind of brought what I'd learned from the underground into now more of a regulatory authority. A lot of things learned there, too, but I felt like that probably wouldn't be my home. And then I wound up with Komatsu. And I feel like it's a perfect fit. And by the way, Jez Leeming is my boss. I am a direct report to him, and very outstanding work relationship, and the people of Komatsu the same way. Diversity, as I see it in Komatsu, is all-encompassing. So here in the mine, we had a female employee as a boss. We had a female union employee. I mean, there were a couple of us, but Komatsu, we not only have women and men, we have people from all over the world. So the diversity spreads. Now you're working with people from different cultures, different backgrounds, and different perspectives. So my hope is that through the position with Komatsu that I can continue to grow. I do see the advantages of diversity, and I still have the ties to the people in the underground operations. So.
Jez and Michelle, with a collective 80 years experience on this panel in the mining industry, as you reflect on your career, and Michelle, you started to share a few of those thoughts with us already, what is there a particular moment that stands out for you as having benefited specifically from diversity or inclusive culture?
Yeah, thank you, Danny. I've been fortunate enough to work with two very strong women in the mining industry in the UK and in the USA. And I've seen their abilities, their strong leadership, and their experience, and the way they lead other people. Particularly in group situations and in leadership teams, we find that women have the empathy to bring in everyone, the best out of everyone in the team. And I've seen on many occasions teams performing far, far better because of the inclusion of everyone through the role of some of the women on the team. Another experience, about 5 years ago, we appointed a young new graduate mining engineer in the USA. And as with all these bright graduate engineers, they settled down very quickly onto the analytics, had superb computer software skills, and were able to do the analysis very, very well. We gave her training underground to give her the training in underground mining systems and equipment operations. And again, she did very, very well at that. What makes this person extremely different is that she's a Chinese national. So as well as now having the abilities to do the analytics and all the job skills, she now has an absolute advantage over all of us in this room, I think, in having the culture and diversity of understanding the Chinese market as well as the US market. And we were able to send her into China on her own to various mines to gather information and do her job in a role that certainly I could not do myself. So bringing on people with new skills and new outlooks on life with different cultural backgrounds has definitely impacted and improved our operations in Komatsu.
And so I reflect again where it's beneficial. Maybe I should start where it wasn't beneficial. So one of the things that makes it tough, especially in underground coal, when you come in as a woman, people, the first question they want to know is, why the heck are you here? You know, or why do you mind getting so dirty? Does it not drive you crazy? You got to overcome those. And when you walk into that situation, you need to understand that those are valid questions. People wonder, what are you doing? Why would you want to choose this? Because the majority of people that they know, their wives, their daughters, their family are not in mining. So overcome that question and entertain that question and give people the real answers and let them know that primarily the reason why you're here is kind of the same reason that they're there. It's because the money's really good.
mining provides a really good life, whether you're married or single, for male and female. Where it's a positive is, and this is building off of what Jez says, women, we tend to be more, and not always, but most of the time, we're kind of nurturing. We are more empathetic. We want to kind of consider. We want to, you know, feel like, you know, I understand why you feel that way. Sometimes men are not as much that way. So how it makes it nice is working it with a crew of 12 people, you've got like a multitude of things going on. You're not just focused on what you're going to mine that day and who's going to move vent curtain and who's going to move the fan and bring dust to the face. You got problems at home. You've got people that are sick in the family. You learn to know these people, to converse with them. And then they think, you know, you're not so bad. You know, you have a trust relationship. When they ask you a question regarding their health and safety, you give them the right answer. You show that you care, and you try to be as honest as you possibly can. So where it worked is that some of the toughest crews that had a heck of a time with a lot of other male employees, those were the ones that I got put with a lot, and I thought it was a punishment at times, and I got to where finally it clicked that we do better. They liked me better, you know. For whatever reason, we got the job done, so everybody was happy in the end.
Thank you, Cheryl and Megan. BHP, being employees of BHP, have set some visionary targets and some aspirational goals, such as gender parity 2025. So companies often set these great visionary plans, but what does it actually look like day to day on the ground? What does it feel like to work for a company where inclusive culture is so focused? So what would it mean to the employee or to the leader?
So for myself, one of the things that I see as showing that we do have an inclusive workplace is when it's safe to speak up, and as well when it's a respectful place. So I'm sure that some in the room can relate in saying that there is often unwelcome comments, not just for females, but I'm sure that other people have experienced those situations as well. I know for myself, I've been in a meeting room with probably about 20 guys. I was the only female, and one of the remarks in the meeting was, well, as has been said before, if it was easy, our wives would be here doing it. So
at that point, you didn't tell me that before, Megan.
At that point in time, it was very early on in my job, in my position. It was a new position for myself, and so I didn't feel comfortable speaking up. With that, I was fortunate enough that that person did reach out to me after and did apologize for that comment. But it is, respectful workplace is huge, and the ability for not just, if you hear something, and it may not even be a comment directed at you, but you also have the right to speak up for that other person or other people in the room, because sometimes you make comments and you don't realize either that it potentially has hurt someone's feelings. And even in that moment, if it doesn't, it could potentially, the next person who's in there, it could. And so for myself, I have very supportive one-up and two-up managers who have definitely made me feel very free to speak up. And it's allowed even for us to have some conversations which probably before weren't as welcomed as they are now. And so for me, it's, being able to speak up and having a respectful workplace, because when you don't have that, it's almost, I know at BHP we talk about chronic unease in the sense of safety, but even on this end, it's almost a chronic unease because you're constantly trying to accept these uncomfortable situations or these uncomfortable phrases, because that is what the norm is, which is very unfortunate in some cases. So speaking up in a respectful workplace is huge.
Yeah, and you know, very much from a leadership point of view as well. Like we're trying to change the demographic of our workforce, and that's better. So you know, a lot of this is really about managing the change. And if you've ever been tasked with that, you know that it takes a compelling vision from your leadership, constant communication, and quite often new tools need to be given to our leaderships to be able to work in this different demographic and different environment that we're trying to create. It's not that easy. So our workplace is changing. People are being valued for how well that they can motivate, energize, and enable their teams and collaborate across teams just as much or probably even more so than their particular trade or profession. So what this looks like day to day is our people are being taught new skills, how to listen effectively, how to build trust, care and empathy, tools with how to work with and across different teams, managing risk, and how to lead diverse teams. So experience is necessary in any team, but right now we're at once a defining factor for recognition and promotion. Capabilities in these other areas are starting to be valued just as much and really sought after. And when you also hire for capability, you have a richer pool of talent to be able to source your workforce from. What this also looks like is more flexibility in how people work. So we've got a global policy around flex work, and what this does is it recognizes that one size doesn't fit all. We have different needs, we have different responsibilities. Work arrangements where possible should be able to reflect these changes or these differences. So you may be a primary caregiver, you may be a single parent, or a myriad of other life situations, and we don't feel that that should disqualify you from working in a mine. Managing life and work, you get better well-being, you get less stress. Workers are more productive when they have that balance or being able to manage their work and their life like they think they can. Research shows there's less sick leave, there's more retention. And again, you can tap into a wider talent base when you actually break down the stigma that you can change your perception that you have to have a certain lifestyle to be able to work in mining. Now, if you're from an operation and you're having trouble buying this because you've got shifts and rosters and everything else, remember, I most of my career has been in remote fly in, fly out, so I'm kind of right there with you. It took me a long time to actually have believability on this. But I do have examples now from BHP where this has worked. I won't say it right now, but if there's perhaps an audience question later or come and see me afterwards, I'd be happy to share these examples because they really made me believe that this was possible. Thank you.
So with the focus on diversity and inclusion in companies and their targets and quotas they're setting, what's being considered for the physical environment and adjusting for a changing demographic? To Cheryl or Megan.
Yeah, so Danny, you touched on it earlier, but obviously in the workplace, it still probably is more office-focused at times than site still, but I know at BHP we're definitely trying to create spaces for mothers who have returned to work and have to pump and things like that. So even with that, it's more than just providing a space. They often need fridges and the ability to clean that. There's also for personnel of different cultures or religions, sometimes they require a place to pray throughout the day. And so having a space for prayer. I know at the Janssen site, we have a large indigenous population out there. And so they have a room available there for them to perform some of their ceremonial rituals, such as smudging, where they do some burning of different grasses and such. And I think the one area which I know BHP has put a lot of focus on in the past year, I think there's still probably work to be done. And I would say one of the biggest things at actually all the sites I've been at is probably washroom facilities underground. You hear a lot of what came out last year throughout the company actually was that washroom facilities across BHP, so across the world, were not doing what they needed to do. They're supposed to be able to provide a hygienic space for you throughout the day, and essentially it was determined that a lot of people refused to use the washroom underground or out in the field just because of the setup out there. So there has been a lot of work done to try to improve those facilities, try to make them so that they are a bit more appealing to use throughout the day. Even dries themselves, often at a lot of sites, the woman's dry is an afterthought, which means that they're much less space and in some cases not an ideal layout. And I think for that even there's the inclusion side of just in the process of doing that planning, making sure that you walk th- through it with a female after when I had issues out at site. And when I went in there with one of the site managers, his comment was, I've actually never been in here. It's like, oh, okay, yeah. So as you can tell, you open that door and you're getting changed right there. So when someone knocks, opens and says, oh, hello, yep, there I am getting changed. So yes, that may have happened at one point in time. But yeah, so dries and washrooms, that's a huge thing that I think still does need a lot of work, but we're definitely headed in the right direction.
Yeah, so this is going to sound a little bit weird, but I'm going to ask you to indulge me for a minute. So, you know, if I can ask you to just kind of close your eyes and focus on the first image that comes into your mind when I say the words underground mine worker. And if you pictured anyone who kind of looked like me or Danny or Megan or Michelle, I'd be very impressed because that's not usually what people picture. And reality is this expectation is established a set of designs and tools that are predisposed or biased to this demographic. And if we're going to change our workforce, we want that demographic to change. We need to be forward thinking, and we need to ensure that this diverse workforce has the right tools to succeed. It also helps with safety, so some standard tools. They're too large for women to grip properly, and this actually leads to more strains and sprains. Tools and equipment that are supplied for a broad range of physical statures and physiques can actually benefit both men and women, and we need to start thinking about that. We all know that poorly fitted PPE is a safety hazard, and yet it's only been in the last couple years that women's high-vis has become available. And a lot of mines still don't even offer that as an option. It's a very simple solution to this problem. There's even maternity high-vis, so think about that one for a minute. We're assessing our facilities, as Megan said, for diversity and accessibility. Our planned mine dry at Janssen, it is designed on the same, you know, for the men and women, the two sides are the same. It's universal washrooms, and they're in the same building. And the walls are designed to be adjustable so that they can actually be modified when our demographic changes. So there's been a lot of thought put into how we can accommodate a changing workforce from when we start mining to 10 years, 15 years from now.
Just a sec. What do you mean by you can modify the walls?
You can move them. So they're modular, and you can actually move them in one direction or another depending on if you have more males or females.
So the women's side doesn't have to be an afterthought.
The women's side is definitely not an afterthought. And actually, the drawings showed the dry as, I think they had 20% women and 80% men, and I've actually asked them to update the drawings so it's 50-50, just to kind of get that message across. And yeah, we'll adjust as we have to, but it's good to start with that thought. Mm-hmm.
So on the Komatsu side, Cheryl, having mentioned some of the equipment and tools, what are you guys seeing happen in the industry around designing for inclusion? Chets?
Is that you, Cheryl?
I think I was going to lead into that one.
Go.
So I'll actually step in here a bit, too. I was also going to say is that we're directly engaging our vendors. Komatsu is one as well. To incorporate diversity into the current and future equipment designs. So take a look at your cab designs. Take a look at perhaps adjustable pedals, where everything is placed in the cab. I mean, these, again, have been done in commercial vehicles, so they can be done in our underground mobile vehicles. To suit different statures, where the controls are, the manual handling during operations and maintenance, we're looking at the pulling forces, the lifting forces, the direction of your pulling and lifting. And, you know, anything that we do here is going to benefit women, but it's also going to benefit men of different statures, too, because we often picture what an underground mobile equipment operator looks like, and we try and fit them into there. But reality is it's a lot of different people who can operate that. We've got diversity specifications being embedded in our equipment specs, in our commercial requirements. And I'll pass it on to Jez because the vendors that we've engaged have been more than willing to come and work with us on this, and they're actually ahead of the game in a lot of ways, too.
Thank you, Cheryl. It's quite interesting what, you know, leading on from that, one interesting aspect is a big cultural change at the moment in South Africa, and I'm not sure how many of you have had direct experience in the underground coal mining in South Africa. But interestingly, in Sasol and Anglo particularly, a lot of the underground operators working on the shuttle cars and the roof bolters are now women. And one of the big issues that they've had in this is that most of these women are actually quite a bit shorter than the men, and they're in the range of 5 or 5 foot 2 as a norm. And so the typical designs for a shuttle car, these women who are very experienced and very, very good can't even reach the pedals to be able to drive the shuttle car. And on a roof bolter, the position of the valve banks and the position of the consumables to be able to grab the drill steel and the resin and the roof bolts is not convenient at all. So it's very important moving forward with our move to diversity and inclusion and with the change in the workforce in South Africa to provide, you know, design leadership into making these vehicles and operator environments more suitable for the actual operators that are using them. So we're working very closely with BHP and with other companies to provide that type of operator interface and to make sure that the aesthetics and the engineering is suitable for all of the operators. Leading on from that, BHP and Komatsu have been working very closely together in an agreed cooperation at the highest levels. And it's quite interesting to note that Ted Ohashi, who is the president of Komatsu Worldwide Limited, and Andrew McKenzie, who is the CEO of BHP, have agreed on an alignment and priority initiatives between the two companies. And the highest of those initiatives is the inclusion and diversity. Part of that panel is really reviewing the feedback from both companies on what can be made better, how to increase the number of women in the design of the equipment, and in collaboration with the OEMs. On the OEM side, there is a move to have more designers who are women and who understand women's needs, and also to make sure that there's the correct training and the operator training to ensure that we design and work in collaboration for the future of this equipment.
So before we move on to our final question and final comment by each of the panelists, we wanted to turn it over to the audience. So we do believe that open dialogue accelerates curiosity and makes things that we once thought impossible possible. So you're welcome to put up your hand, and the mic will come around to you if you have any questions for the panelists or any want some clarity on any of the ideas that were mentioned. All right. So you guys can put your hand up. I'll ask them another question, but feel free to ask.
I think they're in shock.
Yeah. So if by chance anyone in the audience was thinking this business case makes sense or it's compelling and interesting to them as people, or perhaps they're interested in the same kind of competitive advantage that Komatsu and BHP are looking at on this topic, what would be the very first step or the very first conversation for them to have in their organizations? Cheryl, do you want to start?
I've got a few steps, so I hope you don't mind. Yeah, you see diversification happening in the boardroom, but for us to truly get the benefit of it, it really needs to happen at all level of the business. And it's important to remember it's not an overnight solution. It takes time. We're all at different stages of journey, and when you start looking at what's right for your business, you may actually see something that works well in one part of your business that doesn't work well in another. Start small. You know, visible actions can be taken to get started, leads to more suggestions. Talk to your teams. Get underneath what, you know, is holding you back. Ask for their input and, you know, what can be done differently. Look at your environment. You know, maybe there's some symbols that are in your environment that are, you know, unintentionally creating exclusion. So if you have posters on the wall that just show one type of person, it says, you know, you must look like this or be like this to work here. It's a very simple thing to change some of these visual symbols as well. Beware of the language that you use. This is one of my big bugbears, is, you know, the mining industry is full of very masculine terms, and that's fine. It's been built over generations to be that way. But to practice inclusive language, it takes a lot, and I'm working with my peers to try and bring that into our teams. And they're very willing, and you know they try, but it's very difficult to break a habit. And so you know it really takes time to build a new habit of inclusive language. You know, some of the biggest roadblocks for inclusion and diversity is lack of awareness and then apathy in trying. Look at your role descriptions. You know, they could be written with a certain flavor, intent, you know, language that implies, again, that only this type of person need apply to the role. So you can even get third parties to review it, you know, if you really want to go that far. Change starts with awareness. So consider awareness training on unconscious bias. So Danny touched on that a bit at the beginning. And, you know, explore how that might actually be impacting your hiring choices and who and how you recognize and promote. And reach out to other companies, see what they're doing and learn from their successes and their potential failures. So, yeah, try not to change overnight, but start somewhere.
Any suggestions for, you know, Cheryl mentioned hiring managers and a little bit around HR. So any particular suggestions on how to source diverse talent pools?
Thank you. I'll kind of make an attempt at that, and Jez may have something to add as well. I guess one of the best approaches, and I think that Komatsu does a really good job of this, because I think that's how I was brought on into this job, is that when they do recruiting and they're outsourcing, they're looking for people. I think they primarily focus on a skill set. So it's not about bringing the person in and you evaluate them on their physical appearance and whether they're a large male can go underground or whether they're female. I think that their focus is on the skill set. So get beyond that, I guess, that idea that only certain people can do it. And let's look at what this person has done and look at the potential at what they can do. So focus primarily on the on that. And then don't even think about whether it's male or female, okay? Do they have the skills to do the job? And if they don't have them, can we train them? Are they trainable? Can they do that? And I guess bring more awareness, because this whole diversity and inclusion is still relatively new. It's not, but it is, because I think that, I guess, sometimes our thoughts about what it is, it becomes a barrier. So I stepped back, and I think that both companies at one point had to do the same thing. They had to look at what is the base, why do we want this? So if you look through Harvard studies and you look through all these financial companies, they've done these studies of 300 top executives, and the primary reason is the fact that it works. If you have a whole group of women and you have a whole group of men, for the short term, those groups are going to do fabulous. Over the long term, they do poorly. The ones that are mixed do better. It's been proven. So there's a big financial case for why you want to do that. And just step into it, like Cheryl said, slowly, but just get the information together and then make that determination. Could this work for us? Is it going to make our company better?
So as we close, we want to thank each of you for your open-mindedness and your curiosity on the topic, and we sincerely hope that you feel welcomed to this cultural transformation journey that's happening in mining, that perhaps you've gained a new insight or are able to take a few ideas home with you. And we'll close with a final comment by each of the panelists, but should anyone wish to continue this conversation, we're open to doing so this afternoon on the floor. So to each of you, quickly, just 30 seconds or a minute each, if you could snap your fingers and make one adjustment that helped you reach your fullest potential in the mining industry or would help the industry take a quantum leap towards inclusion and diversity, what would it be?
Michelle, you.
Mine is very brief. Take a risk. If a little girl comes in and she's maybe me, short, small, looks like more like, I don't know, should be a school teacher, I guess. But just take a risk once in a while.
Yeah, for myself, I think one of the things that I think would make it greatly easier and definitely more appealable to females and stuff as well is the ability to not feel like you have to choose between your career and a family. So flexible work is a huge thing.
Yeah, we've discussed during the panel today about women in leadership and what women can bring to teams and the improvement of the performance of the teams. We've also looked at the diversity of different cultural experiences and experiences in life. Within Komatsu now, we regularly move our senior leadership teams to different countries and different cultures, and people will not be appointed to the very senior positions within the company without that experience. So I urge you all to think about that in your career. Going to China or to South Africa or to one other of these markets, working with teams of women and teams of people in different cultural awareness, and your rich life tapestry will become much, much richer, and it will make you a better manager and a better leader in the future.
Yeah, and for me, just very briefly, I think I've already said this. If we could change our language, like our language reflects our culture. And if we can use more inclusive language, we can change the perception of mining and we can start to attract a different people to our business.
Thank you all very much.